Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Took a little longer than they expected, but that's just the nature of independent broadcasting out here on the razor's cutting edge of technology. We got her going. I knew we would. We got it going. Come on, Bob. Really? We got it going. We got it going on. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That, of course, is where you'll find access to, among other things, the chat room. And the chat room is filling up nicely, even as we speak. Good evening, Jeremy. Good evening, John. Good evening, Kathy. Good evening, M. Brandt. Good evening, Sentient Being, Sergi. Good evening, Tim. Good evening, Waggy. And good evening, Will in Chicago. And I'm sure that there will be many more come wandering along later in the evening as the program progresses. Yes, yes, yes. It is Friday on the front porch on the Horn, that day that we reserve for a freewheeling roundtable of independent-minded, liberal, progressive-thinking, extraordinary, ordinary Americans. And you're all welcome to join in as you see fit. After taking his first weekend off ever from hosting of the Horn Molloy Skype chat group, Sparky is back in the commander's chair, and he has his lightsaber, which he is loath to use. But he's back, and so if you would like to participate in Friday on the Front Porch, it is quite easy, really. All you need to do is send a contact request on Skype, and I'm not going to start with what is Skype. I'm going to make certain assumptions here. Send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, S-T-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, Sparky Dunk. Send him a contact request, and he'll approve you, and we'll get rolling on Friday on the Front Porch in hopefully about an hour's time. I'm sure Sparky's already got the bat signal out for the Friday on the Front Porch group to assemble. Looking forward to it myself. I truly am. Yeah, over at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, of course, you can also find the Listen Live button. That's really handy. It's the easiest way to grab the stream for, if you're listening on a PC. If you are on some sort of tablet or smart device, on the other hand, then we highly recommend the apps from TuneIn Radio, Stitcher Internet Radio, and Utunes. And I'm sure there are others out there as well. Let's see, Dar.fm has us listed somewhere along the way. If they're still out there, there are a lot of them. There was one. Oh, what was the name of that German outfit? Can't recall offhand. But no, we're listed in a lot of places, a whole lot of places, just not iTunes, of course. We'll work on getting that back too. That was really good. That was really good for a lot of people. Anyway. It's Friday on the Front Porch, and at the Horn's website, at the homepage, you will also find the ever-present PayPal button. The PayPal button is how we fund independent media. There are no ads here. I was thinking earlier today about reaching out to somebody for advertising. I may do it yet, because I don't think I'd get any pushback from the Horn family if we could do it. But I haven't done it yet, and oh well. But you'll hear no ads on this program. No. You will hear no ads. And that is because we prefer for this to be, one, we don't have a sales department, so we don't have somebody out there hustling ads. But two, we don't want any. We don't want this space, this community that we've created, compromised. Because somewhere along the way, one cannot help but self-censor. And advertising sort of brings that along with it. But we might do some outreach just to help keep things going. But at any rate, we try to raise $150, $150 per program to keep all of this going. Not really a lot, really. Oh, you're off. You're off and running, Bob. Not a lot, really. $15 by 10 people. 10 people at $15. One at 150. Two at 75. Three at 50. Six at 25. And thusly. And, well, if you want to help keep all this going, you go to PayPal, you can go to PayPal and use bobkincaid@gmail.com and choose personal and gift, and then go forward, and that way no transfer fees will be applied, or you can just use the PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com. And hopefully we'll take care of fundraising before, wouldn't it be nice if we could do that before the hour is out so there's no mention of it during the roundtable of Extraordinary Ordinary Americans and people from around the world, also Extraordinary Ordinary Canadians, Extraordinary Ordinary Europeans, Extraordinary Ordinary Australians, anybody who wants to jump into the conversation. Okie dokie. Now, it is Friday on the front porch, and, well, we clear out a lot of stuff from the whole previous week during Friday on the front porch. And, of course, there's always new stuff cropping up. With the focus that has been present in the past week on the National Football League, well, I guess it's in the way of things that other stories just sort of pop up. Or not. Maybe the NFL has a violence problem that exists off the field. Minnesota Vikings running back Adrian Peterson has been indicted by a grand jury in Houston, Texas for child abuse. I mean, that's what it is. Child abuse. It stems from the charges stem from a visit that a child made to the Peterson home in the Houston, Texas area, and allegations that the child was beaten. Beaten with a switch. John in the chat room noted just a few minutes ago, a lot of white folks on Twitter asking, what is a switch? Really? I know what a switch is. Oh, yes. Adrian Peterson, and this is an interesting angle in the story. Adrian Peterson was allowed to testify to the grand jury regarding what happened with the switch incident. Apparently, the incident happened in May. The charges of reckless or negligent injury to a child. The boy was 11 years old. Still is 11 years old. Maybe he's 12 by now. The boy's mother noticed that the young fella had injuries and took him to a local doctor, and the doctor notified police. Doctors are supposed to do that upon acquiring knowledge of potential child abuse. Now, I don't know for a fact. Is Adrian Peterson one of those God-fearing, Bible-believing Christian types? because this is an appropriate time. To note that this sort of thing does happen. There's no end of fine, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Bible-thumping Christians who will say, well, it says right there in the good book, spare the rod and spoil the child, as some kind of an excuse for beating young people. Yeah. Oh, what is it? There's a verse from Proverbs. There's a verse from Proverbs that says something like, Proverbs 22:6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Okay? This has had rather disastrous results. What do I mean by that? Well, I mean that it is... That phrase has been used, among other things, by a group of religious hucksters, a pair of religious hucksters, I should say, who have written a book that has sold over 600,000 copies. 600,000 copies. Called To Train Up a Child. And that book, in turn, has been used as it, because it is offered as one, as a parenting manual. I thought you might, because this is a ministry. Yeah. It is a handbook. Ah, yeah, there's an... thank you. Irish Dave pointing out also the old thing, the rule of thumb. Doesn't the rule of thumb come from the idea that you should not beat your wife or your child with a rod any greater than the thickness of a man's thumb? To Train Up a Child by Michael and Debbie Pearl is the name of the book. And it is vicious. Let's see. Here's a few quotes from To Train Up a Child. You'll see where I'll say where I'm going when I'm done with this. Use whatever force is necessary to bring him being the child, use whatever force is necessary to bring him to bay. If you have to sit on him to spank him, then do not hesitate, and hold him there until he is surrendered. Prove that you are bigger, tougher, more patiently enduring, and are unmoved by his wailing. Defeat him totally. Accept no conditions for surrender, no compromise. You are to rule over him as a benevolent sovereign. Your word is final. That's from page 46 of To Train Up a Child. All of this courtesy of Horace Gilgamesh over at awkwardmomentsbible.com. On the bare legs or bottom, switch him 8 or 10 licks. Then, while waiting for the pain to subside, speak calm words of rebuke. If the crying turns to a true, wounded, submissive whimper, you have conquered. He has submitted his will. If the crying is still defiant, protesting, and other than a response to pain, spank him again. Page 80. This is from page 79. A seven-month-old boy had, upon failing to get his way, a seven-month-old boy. Okay? Not an 11-year-old boy, a seven-month-old boy. Had, upon failing to get his way, stiffened, clenched his fists, bared his toothless gums, and called down damnation on the whole place. Really? At a time like that, the angry expression on a baby's face can resemble that of one instigating a riot. Really, really? I mean, I've seen a few babies. The young mother, wanting to do the right thing, stood there in helpless consternation, apologetically shrugging her shoulders and said, "What can I do?" My incredulous 9-year-old whipped back, "Switch him!" The mother responded, "I can't, he's too little." With the wisdom of a veteran who had been on the little end of the switch, my daughter answered, "If he's old enough to pitch a fit, he's old enough to be spanked." Page 55. If a father is attempting to make a child eat his oats, and the child cries for his mother, then the mother should respond by spanking him for whining for her and for not eating his oats. He will then be glad to be dealing only with the father. "How can you have any pudding if you don't eat your meat? You can't have any pudding if you don't eat your meat. Hey, you, stand still with it." Yeah. $600,000 copies of that. And, of course, there's always Matthew 5:18. "For verily," this is Jesus talking, "For verily I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law, till all be fulfilled." Yeah? That means it's all there and it all counts. And if it's all there and it's all counts, as far as Gilgamesh notes, then that means the rule about stoning disobedient children to death is still in play. And consequently, well, is it any wonder that we wind up with, I don't know, I can't remember, is Adrian Peterson one of those people who kneels in the center of the field with the fellowship of Christian athletes after all the ritualized violence that is NFL football? Interesting, if you go over to the To Train Up a Child webpage on Amazon, you'll find a one-star review posted by an individual who says, "In the interest of full disclosure, I did not buy a copy of this book. I managed to find a print copy and borrowed it. Good thing, too, because there is no way I would ever advise anyone to spend their hard-earned money on this trash. That said, I am an adult who was raised by parents who used the techniques in this book. If you want your child to say the following about you, then spend your money and read on. Pearl's philosophy is as old as Adam and Eve. Beat your child into submission all in the name of your God. Sure, never hit your child in anger. If you use Pearl's methods in anger, then that's abuse, right? But if you follow his advice and methods in a calm, forthright manner, that's discipline. That's love. That's guidance." This writer says, "Call the BS police, because that is all this book is, pure, unadulterated bovine excrement. My parents used these methods almost exactly as Pearl describes, until the day, at age 14, I jerked the belt out of the female parental unit's hands and told her that if she ever raised her hand to me again, I would strangle her with that belt. Yeah, she told the male parental unit about my defiance, and when he tried to subdue me, I called the cops. Oh, and what was the incident that led to this confrontation? I was trying to break up a fight my brothers were having with each other. Oh, and when the parental units tried to hit my brothers after that fateful day, you guessed it, I was right there and threatened to call the cops, the neighbors, and anyone else I could get hold of. I kept a journal and made it clear that I would make that journal public. Back then, the public face was the most important thing to them, and I used that to see that my brothers and I would not be beaten again. Today, I'm 60 years old and despise my parents. It took years of counseling to understand that I was under no obligation to love my abusers just because they styled themselves my parents. I have triggers and flashbacks that will follow me to the grave thanks to those two monsters. Oh, yeah, we were fed, clothed, and housed by those same monsters who could have written Pearl's book, and they seemed to think that by feeding, clothing, and housing their children, it gave them the right to hit them with belts, hairbrushes, willow switches, wooden spoons, shoes, etc. And I never allowed my children to be around these people. Ever. So if you want your children to despise you, to keep their children from you, to beat their children just like you taught them, buy the book. On the other hand, if you want your children to grow up to be well-adjusted, loving adults and parents, do everything you can to get Amazon and other distributors to stop selling this trash. There are much better books offering excellent parenting advice out there. But Amazon, of course, is selling it to this day. Again, I do not know if Adrian Peterson is one of those spare the rod and spoil the child types. But if you want to look for the source of a great deal of child abuse in this country, hiding, masquerading as discipline, you need look no further than fundamentalist Christianity. You know, the fundamentalist Christians. Oh, hell yeah, we need to go to war against ISIL. They cut people's heads off. Come here, kid, I'm going to whip you. See how it works. Yeah. Ron and Raleigh noting, when I was growing up, the jailhouse would have been full of my parents and friends' parents. I don't know of any of my friends that weren't switched on a fairly regular basis. The good old days. Subject line on the mail was, "Go get me a switch, boy." I, too, have heard that. Then, of course, it's always worth remembering Dr. James Dobson out there in Colorado Springs, Colorado, who encourages parents to beat their children until they cry real tears. They only run into trouble there if the adult in question has any questions of their own about whether the tears are real enough. See? Yeah. So there's that. Guaranteeing that coming into week two of the NFL season, we will continue to talk not about football, but about the problems that football engenders our larger, highly dysfunctional society. Some folks, however, think that domestic violence is really not a problem. I bet you can guess who one of those folks is. Can't guess? Here you go.
Folks, this, none of this is, this is crazy. We're feminizing this game, and it's a man's game. And if we keep feminizing this game, we're going to ruin it. If we keep chickifying this game, we're going to ruin it. It's going to become something that was never intended to be. And so many men now, executives in the league and sports drive-bys are in a race to see who can be the most politically correct feminized guy. It's comical to watch this.
Is the OxyContin kicking back in or something there, Flush? Chickifying? It's a man's game. Wowzer. Feminized. You'd think the men of America were running around out there popping estrogen pills like M&M's. Yeah. A, that's not even a word. Chickifying. This guy, do we begin to understand why this guy's been married four times? Now, bear in mind, this whole thing, I mean, these comments come you know, from a guy who's been married four times, has a horrible, horrible drug problem. And, of course, has spent a lifetime, a career, if not a lifetime, a career, verbally assaulting and violating women. From referring to women who insist upon equal rights as feminazis to outright calling one individual woman a slut, Sandra Fluck. To this. What is it? I mean, help me here. This is not a rhetorical question. What is it that goes on in the male psyche, or in some male psyches, that finds women to be so utterly and absolutely disgusting? Because I cannot profess to understand that. Because I love women. A married one. A woman gave birth to me. I have three daughters. And while I eschew violence, I have no tolerance for anyone who would do violence to my daughters, to my wife. And I think in the lowest possible terms of any man who does violence to women. And let's understand that one does violence to women not merely through physical acts of striking, but in the myriad vulgarities and epithets that are used on a daily basis. Slurs that are based upon female anatomy. References challenging the manhood of another male by calling him a portion of female genitalia. And all the various words we have for that genitalia, all of which is intended to be insulting and or provoking. And women are ruining Rush Limbaugh's perfectly good time, whether it be on Thursday night or Sunday or Monday night. He just wants to be left alone. He doesn't want to hear any more howling from wife number four that he keeps down in the pit. I'm telling you, I can make your life a living hell. Consuela, come here. Here's a cigar box full of money. Bring me a cigar box full of pills. Find me a little Dominican boy. and bring me my bottle of Viagra that's not in my name. See, I'm still amazed that this guy brings down $55 million a year for broadcasting like this. I am personally amazed. Because I can't equate the value. But in the but when you hear this, what you have to understand that is in the United States of America, it is worth $55 million per year to have someone behind a golden EIB microphone spewing an almost non-stop flood of misogyny. Get all the way down to the ground with that. Misogyny is worth $55 million a year as it vomits forth from the mouth of one human being. That just stymies me. On the other hand, I don't know of anyone who is speaking against domestic abuse, domestic violence. I don't know anyone who is speaking against violence against women. I don't know anyone who is speaking against misogyny that the free market deems to be worth $55 million per year. And in that one little cystic encapsulation, you can find a great deal of what is wrong with this country. Back to America's Truth Detector. I interrupted. Shame on me.
This is crazy. We're feminizing this game, and it's a man's game. And if we keep feminizing this game, we're going to ruin it.
This is a football moment. We need some clarity from America's Truth Detector, broadcasting with half his brain behind his back, and talent on loan from God. Margin call! Is it feminizing the game when we become concerned, finally, after nearly 100 years of head injuries and suicides and early deaths? Is it feminizing the game when we begin to worry about traumatic brain injury, concussions? Is it feminizing the game when we try to take steps to make sure that we don't have another Joe Theismann moment? Millions of people watched Joe Theismann's leg get broken in two, and just saying the words turns my stomach because I was watching at the time. Is it feminizing the game to try to make sure that the repeated head injury suffering professional athletes don't despair so greatly that they eventually, having had their brains rearranged, their brain chemistry rearranged, wind up committing suicide? A decade or so ago, the average lifespan for an NFL lineman was, I think, less than 60 years of age. Because on the one hand, they would work and work and work to get as huge as they possibly could be. And then when their playing days were over, which are very few indeed, their bodies would fall apart. and their hearts would give out. Is that what this clown, this $55 million a year clown, is talking about when he declaims against the feminization of football? Because I'm pretty sure that nobody, I'm pretty sure that Peyton Manning's not in the pocket dropping back while wearing stripper heels. And short of the Lingerie Football League, no one is playing in short skirts or cute little crop tops. I mean, that is a real thing that they tried to get going. I don't know if it's still going or not. I never watched it. But these are real questions. And if this man is saying them, the reason he's worth $55 million a year is because other people are nodding their little bobbly heads going, "That's right, Rush. You tell them. They're ruining football. We like it when the players is a rolling on the ground and a screaming in a agony. We like that whole bunch, Rush." There was a time at the beginning of football when President Theodore Roosevelt intervened, threatening to see the game outlawed. Because young, and of course, there was an economic issue here. Young, college attending, which meant wealth class, young men were getting killed and grievously injured playing the young game of football. Ivy Leaguers, Harvard men, Yalees, Princetonians, Rutgers, I don't know, a Rutgerian? Yeah. Can you imagine, when did the helmet, you know, the leather hat, which is what it was, when did the helmet come into football? You realize that there were people then who were claiming that the game was being ruined. Same with face masks, shoulder pads, thigh pads, hip pads. They're ruining the game. Pretty soon those quarterbacks will be back there wearing a skirt. See how it works. They're going to ruin it. Although, from all appearances, what's ruining the game is the fact that there's a league there that is so hell-bent on money-making and so hell-bent on doing the bidding of the owners that they have to be dragged kicking and screaming into giving a good goddamn about the players. Anyway.
Keep trickifying this game. We're going to ruin it. It's going to become something that it was never intended to be. And so many men now, executives in the league and...
Wait a damn minute. It's going to become something it was never intended to be. See, this is how his shtick works. What, then, was it intended to be? It was intended, at its beginning, to be a game played by young, privileged college boys out to have a good time on the local flat place. Maybe the infield of the track, you know, the running track. Was it intended to be a multi-billion dollar entertainment enterprise? No. It evolved into that, much to the delight of the owners. Was it intended to be a game in which people, men are hauled off the field having just rendered themselves paralyzed forevermore from the neck down? That's happened. Was it intended to be a game in which highly trained athletes were, in the blink of an eye, rendered unable to play that game ever again? See, he just throws this crap out there, and there's no there. There's no in underpinning. But it offers us, and that's why I'm playing this audio, it offers us an opportunity to understand the inner filthy workings of the misogynistic right wing in this country. And what Flimball is about to do then is to do something similar. Extrapolate the feminization of football. Jesus. That phrase makes me just loony. But he's going to extrapolate it into the larger political landscape. Yeah.
To be. And so many men now, executives in the league and sports drive-bys, are in a race to see who can be the most politically correct, feminized guy.
Yeah. I guess he means that sports writers like Charlie Pierce and Dave Zirin and Keith Olbermann are feminized guys. And by that, of course, this trundling tub of pustulant filth is saying that he has a larger penis than those guys. Because this is all really kind of shady, homoerotic, and that's not a slur. This is closety stuff. He's aware.
It's comical to watch this. Now, I'm wondering, James Brown last night had a monologue. We have excerpts of it. It went kind of long. We have got the last half of the monologue. Well, let me read it to you first, and then we'll play the audio. This is James. This is a pregame show. By the way, this followed 20 minutes of Norah O'Donnell from the sideline. She's at the CBS Early Morning News show. She's on the sideline talking about this domestic violence stuff and the Ravens and Ray Rice and the commissioner. And then after that, they cut back to the studio. Now, the studio crew was on site. It was James Brown, Coach Bill Cowher, and Deion Sanders. By the way, one of the war on women, are these guys beating up their wives? Are they all Republicans? Are they? Are they voting Democrat, you think? I mean, who's really conducting the war on women here? Who's actually doing this? Who has brought all this about? All this supposed abuse on women that takes place in the NFL. Who are these guys? Think they're voting Republican? I kind of doubt it.
They are millionaires, after all.
What? Yeah, I did. I did just ask that. Are these guys who are engaging in domestic violence, which is a war on women, are they voting Republican? They're voting Democrat. I think the odds are they're voting Democrat, aren't they? I'm sorry. If they're going to politicize this, they're the ones politicizing this. I'm doing nothing but following along. And they're the ones that have this stupid war on women meme accusing the Republicans of it, and I don't see any Republicans accused of this.
He missed out on the 2012 election cycle, didn't he? He missed out on nature has ways of shutting that down, Todd Akin. He has ways of, who else did he miss? Oh, he missed out on himself, Sandra Fluck. Don't worry, that's the end of the Flush Flimball clip. But do you see the distortion and diversion? you see how he attempts to distract people, his weird little hopping up and down, hairy little listeners from even thinking about the issue? Jack in Shreveport with a note. Yeah, I was able to guess correctly. I heard the pig on the car AM radio for only a few minutes, and he managed to get all the anti-woman crap in. With enough time in a segment, you get some racist crap in as well. At least I got the creepy feeling he was. With the anti-woman stuff, he brought up the war on women. Then he said it. Oh, no. It wasn't Republicans that were involved in the domestic abuse. He asks his listeners whether they thought any of the football players connected to the domestic abuse stories would vote Republican. Nah. What a bastard, says Jack. Ron and Raleigh with a question. Do you think that fat bastard's ever put on a helmet and pads and gotten or given a good hit? Just asking. No. No, I'm sure his pallidal cyst prevented him from doing that, too. I've taken some hits. I was a terrible football player. But it was kind of fun. I just wasn't much good at it. But I mean, you can be sent flying or send somebody flying. And you can hurt. You can really, really hurt. I've got a lasting injury. No, I'm not crawling up on the cross. We need the wood. I was at my high school. I was there the first year we introduced a serious everybody has to do it weight training program. They brought in all kinds of weight equipment. We all worked out, and we sweated like dogs. Do dogs sweat? I know pigs don't. I guess that means Rush Limbaugh doesn't. But I ripped a muscle or tore a muscle or something in my back, and it's bothered me ever since. But there was something fun about it. There was something mean about it, too. But no. And part of this you have to understand is a case of the green-eyed monster, because you'll remember that at one time, in a fit of absolute stupidity, was it ESPN that hired Flush Flemball to be a commentator on Monday Night Football, or was it ABC? Either way, it lasted about a minute and a half, because A, it was obvious the guy knew absolutely nothing in regard to the actual game itself, and B, he wanted to use it as a platform for slurring those people. You know, the dark-skinned ones. Remember when he said Donovan McNabb was an affirmative action quarterback? Yeah. Kate listening in with regard to the switching issue. Get me a switch. Kate says, and if I didn't get a big enough one, they would go out of the bush and get a bigger one. And most of the time, I refused to cry. That review on Amazon could have been written by me. The whole subject makes my heart hurt. Chickifying. They should be so. Oh, never mind. Makes me think of Chick-fil-A. That, too, is violent. SLUT stands for Southern Ladies Under Tension. They're all afraid of us. They know they'll get what they have coming. We're waiting patiently for the day. And it won't be purdy. Most of the slurs, Kate says, and derogatory labels have an origin in female spirituality stripped away by the church fathers. I'll get off the porch now because I have tight jaws listening to this crap from Rush. The horn also provides another service, gives me a deeper understanding as to why I don't have a TV. Yeah. A little Bible help coming in from Tim from L.A. Proverbs 13:24. Whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him. Proverbs 23:13-14. Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you strike him with a rod, he will not die. If you strike him with the rod, you will save his soul from Sheol. Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way he should go, and even when he is old, he will not depart from it. Ephesians 6:4, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Proverbs 22:15, folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline drives it far from him. You know, beating the devil out of him, as it were. Proverbs 29:15, the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. Beat the little fella, mama. Beat him. This is, and by the way, this is the wisdom of the ages. Proverbs is one of those books that is always pointed to by people who don't know the Bible. Yeah, but Proverbs is a good book. Got a lot of good advice in it. Oh, yeah, beat your kids. Proverbs 19:18, discipline your son, for there is hope. Do not set your heart on putting him to death. Now, Pa, we know you want to kill the boy, but just beat him within an inch of his life. And then generally on violence being done among inside a culture, Deuteronomy 25:1-3, if there is a dispute between men, and they come into court, and the judges decide between them, acquitting the innocent and condemning the guilty, then if the guilty man deserves to be beaten, the judge shall cause him to lie down and be beaten in his presence with a number of stripes in proportion to his offense. 40 stripes may be given him, but not more, lest if one should go on to beat him with more stripes than these, your brother be degraded in your sight. Proverbs 20:30. Blows that wound cleanse away evil. Strokes make clean the innermost parts. Nail 'em up! Nail 'em up, I say! Nail some sense into 'em! And then there's the charming verse from Psalms 137:9. Blessed shall be he who takes your little ones and dashes them against the rock. Advice from the all-loving creator of the universe. Another note from Tim. Subject line, being closeted. Here's my theory. I'm a feminist and am damn proud I am. Does that make me weak? I know I can kick the living shit out of Rush Limbaugh, but this would not prove anything. Masculinity does not mean strength, and femininity does not mean weakness. Try having a baby. The late Robin Williams said in a stand-up, if you want to discover what it's like to have a baby, circumcise yourself with a chainsaw, shove an umbrella up your ass, and open it. No man could carry a baby to term without passing out, nor will he experience childbirth. Still, I have a feeling that Rush is saying this because, one, he likes football, two, he may be gay, because the closet is a horrible, horrible place. So to say the comments he is saying, it might be a facade to hide his homosexuality. It's sad that Rush's mental illness is turning him into a moron. Turning him into, Tim, I think that Unitarianism's rubbing off on you. I really do. He's not turning into one. He's been one for a very long time. If he came out and admitted he's gay, then I have a feeling his show would only consist of what's happening in D.C. He probably hates women because he hates how he was possibly born. Wow, that is awesome. A suggestion, I wish I could find it, coming in from Bob in Malden, Massachusetts. If you could find a clip from Rollerball, not the new version, but the one with James Caan, there, on the last game, the coach states to the other team's coach, game? It was never meant to be a game. Never. That does fit well, Bob. That does indeed. Oh, okay. Limbaugh was hired by ESPN, says Marty, for their Sunday morning pregame show. I'm still angry that Tom Jackson and Michael Irvin didn't just walk when they announced it's hiring. It's hiring. Subject line, beatings in history from Jim. Both Hitler and Stalin were severely beaten as children. This is true. This is absolutely true. The former was beaten into a two-day coma and the latter until he urinated blood. What an end result, folks. Yeah, violence begets violence. And it is hard to break the cycle. It has to be consciously addressed. And that is what things like Ray Rice's year-long mandatory attendance in a domestic violence intervention is about. I'm skeptical of it. I'm suspicious of it because it has tied to it the notion of hoop jumping, the hope being that somewhere amidst the hoop jumping there will be an actual spark that is struck that makes him understand that it's not okay to be this way. But see, what the Limbaughs and the right-wingers of the world, because there's lots of them, there was some idiot from the National Review I saw, and a woman at that, who declared that Ray Rice is the real victim here because his wife, or then not quite wife, deliberately knocked herself out on the railing of the side wall of the elevator. No, I'm not kidding. Really. Yeah, I know. I know. Sparky letting me know, breaking news, the Vikings have deactivated Adrian Peterson for Sunday's game against New England. A warrant's been issued for his arrest. At this time, he's not in custody. I imagine he will probably turn himself in with an entire phalanx of lawyers to keep him from having to do the perp walk. Now, you live on the on the corner of reality and tough. You're perp walking. Carol pointing out along the way, Rush usually manages to seamlessly weave sexism, racism, and classism for a fucktard trifecta. We're going to hang on to the fucktard trifecta, I do believe. And one last thing. Because it fits in with all of this. Do we remember who Russell Pierce is? Russell Pierce was a senator. Is he still? Yeah, he got recalled or beaten or something in Arizona. And this, I mean, this guy ran around with neo-Nazis, probably still does. You know, tigers don't change their stripes, nor leopards their spots, nor neo-Nazis their swastikas. And he really proved it. Now, I guess he's not in Arizona state government anymore because he's done got himself a weekly talk radio program. Oh, dear. Let's just go to the audio. Because once again, here's another right-wing neo-Nazi who has figured out that all of America's problems are the fault of either the poor, the female, or the poor females. Yeah.
See the headlines a couple of days ago? Berkeley, California, which is known for being Berkeley, California.
Oh, my. He is a witty one. And you can almost hear the cranky old white man in his voice, can't you? You know what's coming, don't you?
Has decided that if you're poor, they'll give you your marijuana. You show up at City Hall to get your stash. So if you make $32,000 or less, you get free marijuana at City Hall. Medical marijuana, of course.
Anybody want to bet that this is not true? I don't know. Maybe Larry will be in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group here in a little bit for the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. They're just, yeah, come on down to City Hall. If you're, if you make $32,000 or less, we'll give you a big bag of weed. The population of Berkeley is going to explode.
It's just all for medical purposes. I mean, I can't wait for that earthquake and that fault to take place in California. I can't.
Really? This guy wants to kill everybody in the Bay Area over medical marijuana and some poor people getting a doob? There they are, just exuding the gracious, loving kindness of their Lord and Savior.
Can't wait to have shoreline in Arizona. California is lost. Jerry Brown, who is inviting them into his state while they're destroying, like I mentioned earlier, 92 million Americans not in the workforce, 24 million jobs taken by illegal aliens or aliens, those born by parents not U.S. citizens, neither parent being a U.S. citizen, that's carefully. That doesn't include the under the table. That doesn't include the workforce that is not declared to be recognized. So that number's.
Is he just drinking? Or is this how he talks all the time? I've never heard this guy before. Oh my God.
Absolutely much higher. And you got 20.
Absolutely much higher. Okay. All right. Oh, this can't be real. This is made up. This is some parody that was done by one of the voiceover guys. Maybe Harry Shearer, for The Simpsons. Or maybe this is somebody just doing a bad Grandpa Simpson. No, that's real. Yeah, it was in 2011 that Russell Pierce lost his recall election because he was dirty. Among other things, he's also a liar. He claims he attended the University of Arizona in a graduate program. He didn't. He didn't when he was a. When he was in office, he didn't report the Fiesta Bowl tickets that he was given for free while he was getting state subsidies for the Fiesta Bowl. Didn't report $40,000 in paid junkets. Also tells the credulous, mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, drooling boobies of the teabagging right wing that I went to the Harvard University John Kennedy School of Government. Turns out he attended a 3-week seminar there in 1996. When he was asked about it, Russell Pierce said, "Well, what do you put the information in the wrong box?" Wrong box. Jack pointing out, I'm pretty sure they simply found out that marijuana hadn't been put on a list of stuff that Republicans want to make sure poor people can't spend money on. That out in Berkeley. Kelly in Calgary with a note. A cautionary tale for men who beat women. When I was a lad, my Uncle Mickey and Aunt Beth had an abusive marriage. He liked to drink, and when he got drunk, he liked to beat up Beth. This went on for years until one night she had enough. She waited for him to pass out and beat the living shit out of him with a frying pan. I never liked Mickey, but Beth was the kindest, sweetest, gentlest person you could ever hope to meet, and I loved her very much. Anyone can be pushed over the edge, and we all have to sleep sometime. By the way, never laid a hand on her again. Nail some sense into him. Let's get back to Russell Pierce for just a minute, because this is going to get interesting real fast. Now that he said that he wants everybody, not just in the Bay Area, I was misshapen. He wants everybody in California to die in a big earthquake. And Arizona is going to be beachfront property. Now, this has been a a funny talking point for the right wing for years. But anyway, take it away, Russell.
My parents not U.S. citizens. Neither parent being a U.S. citizen. That's carefully. That doesn't include the under the table. That doesn't include the workforce that is not declared to be recognized. So that number is absolutely much higher. And you've got 20 million Americans that are still looking for jobs that are either unemployed or underemployed, but you got 92 million that are removed, not even in the workforce, because we allow them to sit at home and collect a welfare check, government-subsidized housing, WIC, access, free medical. I mean, we have grown, like I said earlier, to this huge socialist state, and the fact that we don't enforce our laws.
See, this is where I lose track. This guy's actually an American. And maybe I'm the minority. Maybe I'm the weirdo. But how is it that it is a popular position with a noisy, ignorant plurality in this country to complain that people have a roof over their heads? To complain that they have enough to eat? To piss and moan about their children being able to go to the doctor when they're sick? What do you mean? You stand his way, your children just don't die. Your children need to die. Oh, no, no, children eating hungry food eating. I promise I will not cue up Lee Greenwood singing God Bless the USA.
Eric, that really opens up Pandora's box when you talk about how bad it is and the damage it does when our government.
This is what Carl the assistant greenskeeper in Caddyshack would sound like if he got old. Big hitter dilemma. Food eating illegals. Free marijuana.
Won't go in and remove people that admit they're illegal. Allow our illegal aliens to march in the street like they did.
Allow our illegal aliens to march in the street? It's the first time. That's the first time I've heard that word since I heard some really good Shakespearean guy doing the opening monologue, opening soliloquy to Richard III. Now is the winter of our discontent, made glorious summer by this son of York. And all the clouds that lowered over our housetops in the deep bosom of the ocean buried. That's the only time I've ever heard Loward before until now. Lower. Lower illegal aliens to march in the street. If you are a right winger, it does not matter if you talk with your tongue flapping out your right fucking nostril, they will put you behind a microphone.
Just before I passed SB 1070 and 100,000 of them marched in Phoenix with their signs, si se puede, today we march, tomorrow we vote. What we're doing.
Morgan DeVeld! Oh, no, wait, that's your buddies, Russell.
This country is absolutely unbelievable. The lawlessness, and again, Eric, if you put me in charge, things would change.
Here we go.
First of all, I'm not sure I'd even allow food stamps to take place, but.
Wait. Okay, we got it? Okay. I was about to screw up big time. Hockey puck. Duct tape. Get it. Quickly. So, he can't stand the lawlessness of useless eaters eating food. Are we there? Good.
Lawlessness, and again, Eric, if you put me in charge, things would change. First of all, I'm not sure I'd even allow food stamps to take place, but I'd certainly get rid of the Lone Star cards, no cash for ding-dongs or ho-hos, you'd only get money for a 50-pound bag of rice and beans, blocks of cheese and powdered milk, all the powdered milk you can haul away.
Because nobody wants the powdered milk.
If you want a steak or frozen pizza, then you'd have to get a job. You put me in charge of Medicaid, the first thing you do is get a woman Norplant birth control implants or tubal ligations.
That's not going to play so well with the little fetus frighteners, is it? What about the snowflake ovaries? No, tubal ligation. Did you catch that?
All the powdered milk you can haul away. If you want a steak or frozen pizza, then you'd have to get a job. You put me in charge of Medicaid, the first thing you do is get a woman an implant, birth control implants or tubal ligations. Then we'll test recipients for drugs and alcohol and nicotine. If you want to produce or use drugs or alcohol, then get a job.
This guy, who is a known fellow traveler with neo-Nazis, just advocated the mass involuntary sterilization of poor women. And in line with all of this Flush Flimball talking about chickifying and feminization and everything, you notice how it's always the women he's going to sterilize, these right-wing turds are going to sterilize? You never hear about them wanting to put the guys in the stirrups and do the little snippety snip and no. Now there's your feminization, because I mean, when the testosterone goes away, the body's natural inclination, all human bodies' natural inclination to produce estrogenic compounds runs to the forefront. By the way, did you know that as a man ages, testosterone becomes a significant factor in heart disease? It does. Come on, testosterone! I guess Russell Pierce is just, oh well. And this guy's on the air at AM 960, The Patriot. Wouldn't you love to hear the ads that run in his program, if any do? It's all buy gold now and Swedish mattresses and bowling balls bouncing on them and Bose Wave radios imploring people to buy gold now or herbal erection remedies and herbal tonics that'll grow hair on the bowling ball and shit like that. Sterilization. Forced sterilization. This man sat in the state government of Arizona. And now, on the public airwaves of Phoenix, he has been given a forum in which he argues that poor women should be forcibly sterilized. Who else was into forced sterilization? Just check it. America. Hell yeah. Tim from LA pointing out that Berkeley is not giving away free marijuana. Opening lines from a news story. Beginning next August, medical marijuana dispensaries in this city will be required to donate at least 2% of their cannabis to low-income residents. The city council approved the requirement this summer, unanimously no less, with the hope of making the drug, which can sell for up to $400 an ounce at dispensaries, affordable for all residents. Tim notes, because Berkeley allowed dispensaries, one of the conditions is to give free medicinal marijuana to poor people. This is not costing the city anything. Oh, and the city is getting money from the taxes from the sale of medicinal marijuana. Well, it doesn't cost the city anything. No, but it's a taxation. It's a improper taken of property under the Fifth Amendment of the New United States Constitution. It's coercive. Ayn Rand, help me! Jesus, what a bunch of... So we're at 18 minutes past the hour. We have brought in precisely no support thus far this evening in our evening goal to raise $150. We managed to come even last night with our fundraising goal. $150 to go this evening, and we are at zero. So just to let you know. Marty says, you know, Bose makes good stuff. Why do they need to advertise on crap programs like that? B- because the, all of right-wing advertising on radio is some sort of call-in ad. And that's, you know, that's how it works. This inflammatory stuff, see, nobody that, you know, like Colgate toothpaste is not going to advertise on Russell Pierce's show because theoretically a lot of people will call in like they, you know, Rush Limbaugh has lost something like 150 listeners since he started his misogynistic crusade. Oh, I just got reminded of something. We are halfway toward the fundraising goal for this evening. Thank you, Tim. Tim put a challenge forth this evening. I wish to contribute $75, he says, as a challenge to all the hornies and Maloyalists. Sick of teabaggers and right-wing Christians? So am I. So meet my challenge, Tim says. That's a lot better than being 100, 150 in the hole. So there is $75 available in matching challenge money out there. We come up with 75, Tim matches it. It can be one shot of 75 or a whole bunch of $5s, but whatever it is, up to 75 bucks, your money doubles. Thank you, Tim. Thank you very kindly. Now, we'll take a little break, and then we'll fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that happens every Friday here on the Horn. Friday on the front porch. It's been kind of gray here, coolish, but it's a nice Friday on the front porch. Pretty soon we'll have to be rolling down the plastic tarps and firing up the infrared propane heaters. But for now, no, it's just a pleasant little evening on the front porch here in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful West by Cole, Virginia. Come on by. If you want to join in, send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C on Skype, and you'll be on the panel before you know it. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
A woman or a girl. You see, man made the car to take us over the road. Man made the train to carry the heavy load. Of the dark. Man made the boat for the water, like Noah made the ark. This is a man's, man's, man's world. But it wouldn't be nothing, nothing. Not a woman on a bed. Baby boys, man make them happy, 'cause man make them toys. And how can man make everything, everything he can? You know that man makes money to buy from other men. A woman or a girl. He's lost in the wilderness. He's lost. happiness.
That may be the most appropriatest bumper that I've run in a long time. The late, the great, the immortal James Brown. It's a man's world. It is Friday on the front porch on the Hornets, 24 minutes past the hour, almost halfway through the program for this evening, and time to fire up the extraordinary, ordinary panel of experts that is the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, Friday on the front porch edition. As capably administered by Sparky. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob.
How in the world are you?
I'm just fine. Could we take care of a little housekeeping business first?
Yes, do let's, please.
I listened to the podcast last night.
Uh-huh.
Got it from the Dropbox, and I heard that Sal stepped up to meet my cheese or pistachio challenge.
Correct.
What did he want, the cheese or the pistachio?
I'm still waiting. Let me check here. I may have missed that. I noted that I needed the address, but he said he thought you already had it.
I have the address. I just need to know which one he wants. It's and or, because I got the little shipping boxes. They're cheaper in them. The bag of pistachios will fit in one of the boxes, just barely, if I just get the air out of it.
Okay, let me...
And there's only one bag of jalapeno pistachios left.
Oh, my.
The butcher shop doesn't have any more. They've got other flavors.
Okay.
Jim in Louisiana should get his cheese tomorrow, complete with a warning label.
did you hand letter a warning label?
No, I just downloaded something from the internet and printed it out.
Okay, let's see. There it is. Okay. Hold on a second.
And Tim made his donation because I fronted him some cheese. He said he would donate.
Okay, so, yeah, here's what Sal said last night. He said, Sparky sent me both the cheese and the pistachios together last time. I love both. But if I have to choose, and I think this serves as an endorsement, if I have to choose, I'll choose that awesome, awesome cheese. He says,
okay.
He says, plus, my girlfriend can tolerate the spice on the pistachios, but not on the most excellent spiced cheese, so I get the cheese all to myself. I maybe shouldn't have read that out loud. If you find yourself enjoying the cheese in the doghouse, Sal, that is entirely my problem and my fault. So there we go. And by the way, it's worth noting that an extra $25 attached to Tim's challenge gets you, if you so desire, your very own parcel of your choice of smoky ghost pepper cheese or pistachios grown right there in Northern California. You just have to tell me which you want and what address to mail it to, and Sparky will get right on it.
Okay, can I tell the other flavors?
Absolutely.
They're honey mustard,
ooh,
garlic, and chili lime.
Ooh, chili lime.
On the pistachios.
Hmm. Well, the garlic what?
Just plain garlic.
Well, that would be good, too. So, you know, you're opening a lot of possibilities here. I'm thinking about maybe trying to figure out a way, for instance, to set up a... Maybe a Wisconsin cheese curd challenge. That would be fun, too. But for now, your choice. And can folks tell you they want the other kind of pistachios, then?
Well, I got one bag of jalapenos. That's all they had there. The owners weren't in the butcher shop today, so I can't find out if they're... I'm not going to ask the hired help. I want to go straight to the owners.
Oh, absolutely.
See if they're going to get any more. But I've got one bag of jalapenos left.
Oh, and they are yummy. You know, when we got our own little care package here, Sparky sent a bag for me and a bag for Ferg. And Ferg wasted no time going through his bag. And next thing I knew, he's back here in the studio going, "Hey, Dad, are you going to finish your pistachios?" See how it works?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we've got a Jim Dandy group gathered together for the Friday on the Front Porch Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Waggy is with us this evening. Good evening, Waggy.
Howdy, howdy.
And congratulations.
Why, thank you very much.
You are most welcome. Todd and Kath are with us.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, Kath.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Todd.
Hi.
good evening. Good evening, Sergi. Sergi?
Sergi's disconnected.
Oh, okay. Okay. Jeremy's with us. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Bob.
Good evening. Now, can Will communicate?
I think so.
Okay, I wasn't sure if you were in radio silence or not.
No, I'm usually only in silent late at night when people are asleep, and the only one here other than me is a cat.
Well, it's good. It's good to have your fully verbal input. And good evening, Carol.
Hello, my darlings. How are you?
Oh, I'm just dandy. I got to tell you that with all the stuff that I went through in the first hour and a quarter or so, I saved the most delicious part for the group. And that,
really?
Yeah, to wit, Sarah Palin's excellent adventure.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Can we have a little Scruggs and Flat background music before?
Well, you know, I got to be careful about that though, because
Jackety Sack.
I don't want to slur my own hillbilly heritage. These, you know, that gang out. Well, apparently, one person, there was this fracas Saturday night in which Sarah Palin and her whole ugly tribe were involved, and at one point somebody hollered, "This isn't some damned hillbilly reality show." Because, I mean, the fur was flying and the fists were, and I guess the Denali dingbat came up screaming, "Don't you know who I am?" And I've got dueling banjos if I absolutely have to, but you know.
Well, the born again virgin daughter
arsenal.
Yeah, the born again virgin daughter threw punches, and Daddy Todd was standing there screaming, calling some teenage girl the C word.
Breaking Bad, Alaska.
Family Christian.
Hey, tough crowd. I came up.
Can we give it back to Russia?
I came up with a brand new epithet for her, and it just blew right by with no real appreciation. I'm hurt. Because I mean, there are so many. You know, we've got Caribou Barbie and Mussolini and Godzilla from Wasilla, the half baked Alaskan. And today I came up with Yosemite Yahoo and Denali Dingbat.
I thought you had used Denali Dingbat.
There's an Alaskan blogger that I find follow.
But Sarah Palin.
Hey, Will, you're breaking up real bad, buddy.
There's an Alaskan blogger that I follows her. The trials and tribulations of the Palin family. He refers to her as the Wasilla Wendigo.
That's a dandy. Well, I mean, she just inspires it, doesn't she?
Mm-hmm. I think Sergi's with us now, and Haley's joined us, too.
Oh, hello. Excellent. Good evening, Haley.
Hi, Bob. Hi, Duncan. Hi, everyone.
And good evening, Sergi.
Hi, Sergi.
Good evening, Bob, and everyone.
Hey, Sergi.
Hey, Sergi.
You got a weather report for us for a Texas political story?
I know you had some sort of fun story for us this evening, Sergi.
I actually have a threefer. However, I am on my way to a better connection because my cell connection's a little bit shaky right now. So I'll tell y'all when I'm there. I'll be in the call. And then I'll give you all the lowdown because there's three awesome stories I have.
Okay.
We will be waiting.
With bells on.
You know how pissed off a Californian is when an Arizonan tries to tell us something?
Well, I was thinking that can't be, that couldn't play well.
No, I have a friend who's been in LA for, good heavens, close to 20 years now, and she says pretty much whenever Arizona does something, everyone in California laughs. Even Sarge mentioned that the state was getting called Arabama by a few of the critics.
Ouch.
Yep. Arabama. And I actually...
I kind of like Arisippi.
Arisippi kind of works, too. But suffice it to... Yep, but suffice it to say, I explained Russell Pierce to a friend who worked at the time for the Illinois Chamber of Commerce. And after explaining it, he said, the people in the surrounding states must have their chambers of commerce laughing their heads off. And, Bob, I hate to say it, if I recall from listening and watching the news in Phoenix while I lived there, I think Russell Pierce does sound like that.
Yeah, like Carl the assistant greenskeeper at the age of 90.
Yep. And I did, by the way, post in the chat room earlier a few links on Pierce, whose wife did file a petition of separation in 1980 against him, where she accused him of trying to grab her throat. And I also pierced something on Pierce's former protege, J.T. Reddy, former neo-Nazi, now current corpse. After who, as you may recall, his last public act was to shoot four people and take his own life. Sadly, there's an element in this culture which seems to be only happy if they have someone to look down upon and lord it over. This is the audience that a Russell Pierce or a Rush Limbaugh appeals to, and without someone to hate, it would be rather like what Tolkien said about the orcs of Mordor. They would immediately turn on each other, but give them someone else to hate who's different from themselves, and that is what will unite people who might despise each other. I mean, the pathology of the current GOP would probably give Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung ample opportunities to write papers.
And send an entire family of psychologist children to dental school, right?
Are you kidding? Could send them to Harvard and Cambridge. In Oxford or any other university on the planet. I mean, consider this. I took the time to watch a program on MSNBC tonight by a former on-air host, and a lot of it was on football. And what amazed me is we have people standing up to defend Rice, and sure as hell, there will be people standing up to defend Peterson. Why? Because tribalism. We have people who identify so closely with an idea or a team that they forget their humanity. And sad to say, I think we're going to see more of an effort to push it under the rug. Mind you, Goodell, the NFL commissioner, is already in a bit of trouble. So the question is, will the trouble be enough for the other owners to make him the sacrificial goat and send him out into the desert? But I think we really have a crisis in domestic violence in this country because of people like Russell Pierce, who decide that some human lives are worth less than others, and some people really aren't people. They're subhumans or things. There's less of a difference between Russell Pierce and J.T. Reddy than you'd think, or that they'd want you to think.
Sergi, you were saying something.
A little bit of a note on tribal. tribalism. I mean, the sport of football itself kind of lends itself to it.
Well, yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, the most ancient forms of warfare were a number of people gathering across the valley from another number of people, and they would holler things at each other, and then they'd throw rocks, and then they'd go home.
Football. That, and I mean, the whole sport boils down to big, burly, pseudo-alpha males fighting over a piece of dead pig. And as far as I'm concerned, you can't get more caveman-ish than that.
Well, and more importantly, is the fandom.
Yes, and what shocked me was what I heard from some of the fans. Many defending Rice were women, who saying, well, he did something wrong, but he's done a lot of good. Excuse me, the main good that he has done has come from his ability to play a game, and a game is never as important as the safety and well-being of a human or another living creature. And this is what I found amazing listening, watching the program. I think Bob knows whom I'm alluding to, but I don't know whether or not he wants me to mention Mr. cancels the show suddenly and sends program directors scrambling. But what we really need to take a good look at ourselves in society, and it seems like we have two counteracting forces. One, calling for greater dignity for people and respect. And the opposing force, symbolized by Russell Pierce and some of the fans I heard, which are afraid of change, which resist change, which view change of any sort as an evil. And yet, growth is only possible through change. Oh, my actual phone's ringing, so I better answer that.
Sounds good.
Good. You know, you talk about football is in a lot of... I go back to the 50s following the 49ers, and it's just, you know, you grow up with football, so you just root for this one team or whatever. And I was a Raiders fan until they moved to L.A., and then, of course, up here, we called them the Oakland Traders for a long time. The L.A. Traders. But you just grow up. And nowadays, you can go. Every team has a website, and they have their own little production staff. Like, I follow the 49ers, and you can see videos, and you can get to know the players, and you can get to see what they're doing in the community for events and stuff. So last night, I guess... somebody, ESPN somebody, but I saw on the Ed show today, they had a bunch of women on there with Rice jerseys, and they were interviewing all of them. And then
of them said,
they're all white women.
They always are.
Season ticket holders. And I mean, one gal was standing outside. She had a little like travel trailer, and you know, out in the parking lot, you know, tailgating. Is where they interviewed most of them. And she has big trailers with Ravens on the side of it and everything. The woman had to be in her 70s. And she started talking about what he did to the community. But, I mean, unless you follow the team really closely, you don't know what the players are doing off the field in the community, because the teams push players out to do stuff all the time. You know, and every team has their charities and all that stuff they do. Community relations people. You know, they all have them.
Oh, sure.
So they, you know, I'm just seeing some of these women, it just was like, well, we can forgive him for what he did. And one gal says,
they didn't bust your head into an elevator wall, lady.
No, but she says, oh, she hit him first. And she's like, if you know, she was like, It's a natural reaction. If she hits you first, you just hit back or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah, she hit him first, so he just, hey, Carol, no, I got
that's bullshit.
Yeah, it
is. I was married to a woman that hit me occasionally, which is, you know, part of the reason why that's no longer, and did other nasty, violent things. And self-control is, you know, something that adults have.
If somebody's going to reach out and hit you like that, you know, with a woman, you think you reach out. I mean, you can see the punch coming, you grab her arm.
Yeah, that is the most forceful thing I ever did was restrain her wrists to keep from hitting me again.
Yeah, because it's almost like an automatic reaction when somebody hits you.
Oh, it is. Defensive posture is automatic. That's why even if someone's shooting at you, you hold up your hands, even though, you know that's not going to do anything. But it's still completely automatic.
Okay, as a woman, I'd like to weigh in on this one.
Oh, please do.
I was waiting.
Well, I've been sitting here very quietly listening, and, you know, when I was a kid, there were, you know, we had a litter of kids in our family. There were 7 girls and 6 boys, and you were naturally going to get us punching on each other. And the one thing that my father drilled into our brothers at a very early age was, under no circumstances do you ever hit a woman. And I don't care what she does. If she hits you first, then you walk away, because what she does to you is nothing compared to the damage that you can do to her. And it didn't help that after the first tape came out, that Ray Rice came out with his wife on the stage and essentially had her apologize for her part in this thing, which I recognized as, you know, grieving for a relationship is very much like the 5 stages of death. You know, there's the denial, there's the acceptance, there's all of that. And you go through this period during an abusive relationship where you think that you deserve it, or part of this was your fault. And I recognize that. I had 9 years of it. And then she went on to say that, well, and then Roger Goodell interviewed Ray Rice and her together in the same room, which is an anathema to everything that you know about talking to victims of domestic abuse. And so here she is sitting in a room with her abuser, having to explain what happened. And then after the second tape comes out, she wants to blame the media for the end of her husband's career. Well, Jenna Rice, I want to say to you, the media didn't ruin your husband's career. Social media didn't ruin your husband's career. Your husband ruined your husband's career. He did it all by himself when he punched you. And I don't care if she spit on him. I don't care if she hit him. What he did, he is larger and stronger. It is about control of another human being. It is about anger. It's about a lot of things, but it isn't about love. And she is in complete denial. She can talk about how much she loves her husband. We've all rationalized the abuse because we love him, you know?
Oh, I love how you say that.
Because every time I try to talk to a woman about getting away from her abuser, she always says, but I love him. And I recognize it because I did the same thing. And we do continue to love them until it becomes so obvious to us that we deserve better, and we continue to love them until we realize that it isn't about love.
Well,
isn't love.
Carol, if I could ask a question, where's the break point between I deserve better and I don't deserve this? I mean, does that happen at the same time, or
no.
are they separate paths?
Well, let me tell you where it happened with me. I was on my 5th broken nose and broken ribs. I was sitting in an emergency room in Chicago at Gottlieb Hospital at 3:00 in the morning. A probably 300-pound nurse walked in the room, ordered the doctor and everyone else out of the room, and if you had seen her, you would have known why no one argued with her. They left the room. She put her hands on her hips. She looked at me and she said, I don't feel one goddamn bit sorry for you. And the next time you come in here, I will remember you, and I will be the nurse that will identify your body. And she walked out. And I chewed on that for 24 hours. And after that, it was 2 days later, I packed my bags and I left. because I realized she was right. He was going to kill me.
Yeah, and the numbers are very real, and I want to be very careful about this lest I wander off down the road into some sort of disgusting mansplaining, Carol. But the numbers are very real. An abusive man will abuse his significant other, spouse, lover, whatever, 8 times on average, and on the 8th time she will either leave or die.
That's right.
There's nothing else. There's leave or die, right?
That's right. It does not get better. They do not stop hitting you.
Okay. Can I ask another question then?
Sure.
You said it doesn't get better. They don't stop hitting you. What about these interventions like these year-long domestic abuse programs? Can they work?
I doubt it. I don't know. Do pedophiles stop sexually abusing people?
See, that's where I was going, and I didn't know if it was okay.
Yeah, absolutely it's okay, because it's true. It is so ingrained in them. And the worst part of it is if you have children, then you teach your children that that's what love is. And you have daughters who marry abusers because they think that's what love is. And this is the problem that I have with this. And I'm not mad at Jenna Rice. I get that she's still in this stage where she's rationalizing all this and she really believes she loves him. And people are going, oh, she's just mad that he lost his career because she lost her money ticket. It isn't about that at all. She genuinely loves this guy. She just doesn't realize that she's married to a very violent individual who has this so ingrained. And look at what his job is, to go out there and hurt people every week.
Well, and that was the next question. Are we engaged in a false discussion to a certain extent because we're focusing on in particular football, or you know, do we expand it to professional athletics generally? Because you know what, there's a lot of guys who work at the gas station, who work at the grocery store, who drive truck, who have, you know, all the myriad ordinary jobs of the uniquely American experience, or several of them, and they do it too.
Yes.
Bob, can I jump in here for just a second, because I think this might be pertinent to where you're at right now in this conversation.
Please do, Tom.
I took a look at some numbers here through a couple of databases. Now, I couldn't quite get a one-to-one comparison because the results of one database was looking at ages 25 through 29, which is the give or take average, contains the average age of the players in the NFL. The other one was comparing just society in general. And the third one was narrowing it down to ages 20 to 35. And I'll try and keep this, from getting too geeky. The NFL arrest rates, the number one reason that players in the NFL get arrested is for domestic violence. Now, compared to a society as a whole, the NFL players get arrested only 55.4% of the time as those in the general population. However, if you break that down to the ages that they're at and the economics that they're at, which is, for the sake of argument, was done I had $75,000 and over with 0% poverty rate, which would be the NFL, give or take. General population within that age and financial group, less than 20% of the males commit domestic violence. That same group of NFL players are at 55%. So, in other words, the NFL players are committing domestic violence at 2.5 times the percent of the general population of within their own age group. So, yeah, I think there is a problem within, you know, the NFL. Now, I didn't go into other sports.
Right. Well, Todd, one of the things that I wanted to bring into this conversation is that, and this is, you know, this is a byproduct of that cup of coffee I had in law school. You learn about things called foreseeability. And you learn about another thing called pattern and practice. That is, let's say a young guy goes in and knocks over a liquor store. Well, he gets caught and he comes into the court, and it's the only time he's ever done it. That is a different situation from the guy who gets brought in and he's done it 6 other times.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, it becomes a pattern and it becomes a practice. It rises above the stupidity of being drunk on a Friday night or something, or economic desperation or anything like that. And the reason I bring this up is, what was it? Was it 2 years ago that the player for the Kansas City Chiefs?
I was just going to go there. Jovan Belcher murdered his girlfriend.
Yeah.
And shot himself right outside the stadium.
But because, and see, I put so much of this on the culture created by the NFL, you know, that benevolent 501c3 charitable organization that's not out to make a profit. Of course not. But I get the sense that they like to look at these things, as sort of ad hoc isolated incidents, when everything that you're saying, Carol, and everything that you're saying, Todd, points to something entirely different, to a culture, to a pattern, to a practice. Have I got it?
Right. Now, if I could expand on that just a smidge here, you could take a look at Ray Rice's reaction when that happens. Now, you know, Kathy and I were talking about this situation. If we're down doing, let's say, dishes together, and I step backwards and accidentally bump into her or hit her with my elbow. I can say unintentional. It was just one of those kitchen. I get a look of shock and horror on my face. Oh my God, did I hurt you? Are you okay? You know, she's, you know, over the top stuff, you know, but I want to make sure that the woman I love, that I didn't hurt the woman that I love. It was a complete, you can look at Ray Rice's reaction and pretty much say that that wasn't the first time that this has happened. And then we can backtrack and
wasn't his reaction either. That was not his reaction.
Right, right. He, you could tell that this wasn't the first time that had happened, just by his reaction, go, shit, there it is again. And then you can go backwards and say, okay, professional football. Okay, well, we can move into, you know, let's take it back to college football. And some of the issues there most recently, and this is comparing apples to oranges, but Penn State, you know, gets reinstated this year after with the penalties that Jerry Sandusky had that were supposed to go through 2015, and now most of those, except for the fine towards the $60 million fine, I think it was, giving it towards child abuse organizations. Everything else has been dropped, and they're eligible for bowl games, and they get their bowl permission to play the bowl games, and their scholarships back. And so what's that saying? Okay, everybody's happy that Penn State isn't getting punished anymore, and the people that are there at Penn State aren't the same people, so why should they be punished? But what about the people that actually were involved with that situation? They're still dealing with it.
But I will tell you why Penn State should continue to be punished, and it is because they have long had a culture of this big, everything around the school, kind of centering around their football program.
Exactly, yes.
and the fundraising, the millions and millions of dollars of fundraising, and the reason why all of this was kept quiet. And none of that is going to change.
Right. I absolutely agree with you, Carol. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm on your side on this. I'm just, and I'm saying that this is supporting, you know, of this whole culture. Now let's go back a little bit more. Steubenville, of the issue that went with there. So we'll go from college to high school. One of the players that got, arrested, convicted, and served time for raping the drunk, passed out girl at Steubenville, a year or 2 years ago, whenever it was, returned to the football field this year and received a standing ovation, coming back. And, got a cousin that worked down around that area. And the workers in that area were all pissed off that these boys were taken off that football team. It shows kind of the fans' reaction and the town society's reaction that it doesn't matter as long as the team is winning. And, you know, you can see it there again. It's the culture. It's the players, the coaches, and the fans. Now let's take it back one more level. Kathy and I were up. I'm sorry, I'm turning this into a filibobster. Kathy and I were up walking the dogs behind a middle school that's a couple of block or so away from the house, and they have fifth, sixth grade football. And there was a coach that was ending the practice while we were up there watching. We were just sitting on the bleachers, getting, you know, enjoying some sun. And they were getting ready to play. I think it may have been their first game last year. And they were all huddled around, and the coach was giving them the final talk at the end of practice before the game the next day. And he was saying, okay, now I want you guys to get up and essentially get violent and go out and get them and attack them and make them feel it. And the actual quote that sticks in my mind was, I want you guys to go out there and slap them in the face. Now, these are kids that, like I say, fourth, fifth grade, you know, whatever. And this is the kind of quote unquote sportsmanship that they're being taught from that age all the way up. And so, yeah, it's endemic, and it's so ingrained from, you know, fourth grade all the way through as long as they want to play. And with that, and I've said my piece, I'm just appalled at all this stuff, and I'm glad it's finally seeing some light of day. So thank you very much. I'll sit back and listen.
Well, I want to roll this back even further, because I'm going to tell you, I have been told that Janae Rice got beaten because she hit Ray Rice. She got beaten because she spit at Ray Rice. I'm told that that girl in Steubenville got raped because she had too much to drink. She was too young and shouldn't have been there, what she was wearing, et cetera, et cetera. Women are not beaten because they provoked their attacker. There are times when all a woman needs to get beaten is a pulse. The reason girls get raped is not because of what they wear, how much they've had to drink. Women are raped because men choose to rape them. Women are beaten because men choose to beat them. Period. It ends there.
Right.
Yes.
These crimes of violence. It is not about love or sexuality, but raw power and a desire for dominance. And with that, I will bid everyone adieu, and as I am wont to do, remember, the horn depends on your support to stay on the air. So if you like this as an alternative to Rush Limbaugh and Russell Pierce, feel free to help out. And to everyone, be safe, be well, stay strong, keep the fight up, because I think we got the SOBs on the ropes.
Have a good evening, a good weekend, Will.
Thanks, Will.
Bye, Will.
No, I think we're on to something here. And part of the reason that I brought in the Adrian Peterson story with all of this is because the broad-based cultural component to all of this. violence in all its myriad forms. And I don't think any social scientist worth her salt would disagree with me. Violence is learned behavior.
Yes.
We could probably look into, and you know, this is not about visiting the sins of the father upon the children. This isn't some sort of attainder or any of that other stuff that's talked about in the Constitution. But if you look into Ray Rice's background, you will probably find violence. If you look in, if you look into the backgrounds of the kids at Steubenville, there's probably violence, permissiveness, privilege.
Privilege.
Yeah, and I mean, we have a lot of fun with the religion industry here, by way of poking fun at them, because otherwise we would just sit around quaking in terror of them. But you've got a worldview that says it's okay to beat on children. It really is true that James Dobson, speaking to millions of people, said children need to be beaten until they cry real tears. It really is true that he suggested that men need to take little boys into the shower and shake their penises at them so as to keep them from getting a case of the gay. Now, with all of this as a sort of backdrop tableau, why the hell is anybody surprised that we have the violence issues in this country that we have? Yeah, how would you, I hope I'm not creating a problem here, Carol. How would you like to be Darren Wilson's wife?
No, no, thanks.
Hey, Bob, have you ever heard of a spat line?
No. Maybe.
Maybe?
Maybe I've heard the line, heard the phrase, but I don't know what it means.
Well, I'll tell you. So I graduated from eighth grade in 1965, and I don't know what, I can't remember what people did or how they got in trouble, but you'd be in a PE class and a coach would say, form a spat line. So the guys would get, you know, across from each other. And then it's like running a gauntlet. You'd have to run through there and everybody was supposed to smack you on the butt as hard as they could.
No homoeroticism there.
Oh, yeah, I remember something like that.
Yeah, we just called it a gauntlet.
Mm-hmm.
I did.
And again, look, it's starting in infancy.
It's just a memory that's rolling around in my brain.
There are all these little elements of just pure, unmitigated meanness.
I think I went through it once, at least.
And we perpetuate it generationally. I remember, well, I mentioned it on air. I think I'd been flying somewhere, maybe up to Wisconsin or something. And I was sitting in the airport in Atlanta, and there was some story about some child having the stuffing beaten out of him, or maybe it was Maury or Jerry Springer or something. And there was a man sitting there and said, "Oh, see," and I'm only doing the accent because he was doing the accent. "Oh, see, nothing wrong with spanking a kid. My daddy blistered my ass from the time I can remember, and I'm a successful law-abiding citizen." And it was one of those moments that I was very proud of myself for my ability to keep my nasty liberal mouth shut. Because who needs a brawl in the Atlanta airport, right?
Yeah, that's a very bad place to pick one.
But
any airport.
But you know, whether we're talking about, I mean, I've got I was watching video earlier today of a dive bar, and you know that's a term of endearment now, by the way. A dive bar somewhere in Kentucky, in a populous area, a very popular bar. Cops walk in and shake down the bar and start demanding to search people with no probable cause whatsoever. Second person they search is a person of color. First thing they do is, who here's got something illegal on them? All right, none of you got nothing illegal on you? We're going to search every one of you. And it's just people sitting in a beer joint.
Yeah, we're going to search every one of you, starting with the black guy.
Yeah, right. Maybe I'm overboard. Tell me if I am. But all of these things, it's like knitting. You know, they are all knit together. A country that is violent to its children is a country that is violent to women. A country that is violent to women and children is violent to its citizenry. A country that is violent to women and children and its citizenry is violent to the world.
America.
Any problems with that thesis?
No. Love it or leave it.
And interestingly, the more that we turn to our fundamental Christian values and the more we try to integrate Christianity in with our legal system and our form of government, the worse it gets, because we're talking about a religion that lumps women in with cows and sheep and personal belongings and...
Yeah, property transfers.
Didn't have a problem with slavery for a very, very long time. So it all makes sense that the more religious you get, the more you're going to turn towards racism and sexism and classism.
And they're way out of the closet. I mean, 50 years
ago.
Okay, not 50. How about 30? How about 30 years ago in Arizona? Could a politician have taken to the public airwaves to demand the involuntary sterilization of poor women? Would there have been some sort of an outcry, or would there have been some sort of ability under the Fairness Doctrine to at least respond and say that this guy is an anti-American puke? Good God, 30 years ago wouldn't get us to the Fairness Doctrine, would it?
No.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there were people saying such things about African Americans at the time.
Well, there were, Waggy, but they were understood to be fringe freaks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing I was trying to think of, is that were they mainstream politicians?
No, racism is the new black, to forgive my turn of phrase there, but it is.
Yeah, and I agree with Waggy. I don't necessarily know that you would have seen a politician doing that, but, amongst the overly white community that I live in, or lived in at that point, I heard the comments about the black and the welfare queens and everything else, and
the
thoughts of sterilization, to stop that from happening. Sad as it is.
And of course, we did some experimentation along those lines in our deeper, dimmer, more hateful past. Then there's the story coming out of Georgia in the last few days about the Georgia Republican politician who admitted straight up that Georgia needs to stop black people from voting.
Oh, yeah. Said it right out loud.
Oh, my. I missed that one.
Well, because there's an effort underway that has thus far registered about 85. There are, God, 700,000 unregistered people of color in the state of Georgia? Or 200,000, some outrageous six-digit figure. And there have been efforts that have resulted in the registration of 85,000 people. And the Secretary of State's office in Georgia has decided to drop subpoenas on, and they're doing everything they can to shut the effort down.
The man's name is Senator Fran Miller.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, and that's M-I-L-L-A-R, isn't it?
A-R, yes.
Aren't they afraid Sam Nunn's daughter's going to get elected senator?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And Chip Carter may wind up being a senator, right?
Yep.
Now, one of the hilarious things about that is both the scion of the Carter family and the scion of the Nunn family were full-throated in their advocacy of the guns everywhere law. So we're not, just so we're all on the same page here, we're not talking about some sort of you know, raging liberal knee jerk, you know, to the barricades, cast off your chains, the only thing you have to lose, blah, 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 blah. No. No, we're talking about Sam Nunn Democrats doing what you have to do to get elected in Georgia.
I got, speaking of that, guns everywhere in Georgia, a couple of weeks ago, they had one of those joke sites came out with the, they were going to put gun vending machines in Georgia. I believed it for a few minutes until I started doing some research on it, searches on it. And I thought, oh, that's just one of them joke sites.
Yeah, but the fact of the matter is, Sparky,
it just sounds like they do something
Well, it does, but the thing is, when you get right down to it, a gun show is exactly that. You know, if you walk into Billy Bob's Guns, it's going to be a little bit more complicated. But if you just go to the great big Confederate I Love Jesus gun show down to the DeKalb County Armory, you put the money on the table, you buy the gun, you walk away. Mm-hmm. It is the same principle as a damn gun as a damn gumball machine. It's a gunball machine.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, this almost begins to feel like some sort of a unified field theory of right-wing screwed-upness of this country. And it's reaching a fever pitch. And I guess now we can sort of, like making some sort of demented angel food cake, we can lightly fold in our brand-new shiny war in Iraq and Syria. Because a country that is steeped in violence is going to see violence as a viable alternative to problem solving.
Yeah, if I may, am I coming through okay?
Yes, you are.
All right. Well, a little bit of news from Texas here. Their governor's race has been heating up, and so is the race for lieutenant governor. This weekend is our second weekend of action for Battleground Texas, Wendy Davis campaign, and Democratic Party all over the state. We are going to have people out. We're going to have pretty much literally an army of people out, block walking, phone banking, and registering voters and that whole thing. By this point, we have the biggest ground game pretty much in the history of the state. We have well over 25,000 active volunteers doing this stuff around the state. We're reaching out to voters. We are keeping the momentum going. Now, unfortunately, there hasn't been much polling. Polling has been very sparse for this race and lieutenant governor's race. So there hasn't really been any new polls. But the momentum's on our side because we're the ones blanketing the TV airwaves. We're the ones reaching out more and more via the phone, the whole nine yards. And I am confident, pretty much by this point, confident in our ability to win.
How many, Sergey, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
How many people you got there in the headquarters tonight?
Well, I'm not there tonight. I'm at McDonald's again.
Oh, that's where you went to the good website. Sounds like you were at a headquarters with a phone bank.
No, we never do phone banks on Friday evenings because it's Friday evening, you know. But we're tomorrow and Sunday is our weekend, and keep in mind this 25,000 figure is only Battleground Texas. That's not counting everybody volunteering for the state Democratic Party, for county level parties, for individual candidates. That's just Battleground. So I'm confident. Wendy Davis is waking the sleeping giant. She has opened rather the sleeping giant, and I'm confident in our ability.
She was on Rachel Maddow the other night hawking her book.
Yeah, I haven't yet gotten around to seeing that segment yet, but I definitely plan to watch it sometime this week. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and a figure also came out. Wendy Davis, since July, Wendy Davis has held over 100 public events. Greg Abbott, 11.
Wow.
And on top of that, when you look at these photos of her events, they're getting extraordinary turnout. Wendy Davis went up to Denton. For those of y'all that don't know, Denton is this small city of about 100,000 or so people. It's pretty much makes up the northwest. Denton County is the northwestern part of the Metroplex. And she went up to UNT to speak. And you look at that picture, like speaking to them, you know, not just speak, you know, it's a whole rally. You look at that picture while she was on the stage, and there's just a sea of bodies. Just can't see, hardly see the ground. It was a sea of bodies, and that was in a city of maybe 100,000 people. I only think Denton has that many. So it is definitely an incredible sight, seeing people, so many people getting excited for a midterm election here.
Well, I've got my fingers crossed down there. It would simply because with all the things we've been talking about this evening, it would be beneficial if a state like Texas would push back, you know, against a sick misogynist like Greg Abbott.
And don't forget Dan Patrick. Dan Patrick's even worse than Abbott. He doesn't hold events. He didn't run in ads. He ain't doing nothing with the... It was the lieutenant governor's race. You know, Dan Patrick is Greg Abbott's running mate, and Leticia Vanderpeel is Wendy's running mate. And here's the thing. Even if Wendy loses, Leticia's likely going to win. You know, even if Wendy ends up losing, Leticia's likely going to win because Dan Patrick, like, Greg Abbott is a quote-unquote establishment Republican, but Dan Patrick is this... He's this off-the-wall teabagger. I mean, he is just...
Yeah, Sergi, I meant to snap you a pic about a month ago when I was walking down my street, and lo and behold, in one of the yards on my little street here in San Antonio, Texas, was a Wendy Davis for Governor poster.
Yeah, one of the main strategies is, you know, even this last 20 years, Texas has always had more Democrats than Republicans. It's just the Democrats aren't getting off their butts and voting. They aren't getting off their butts and doing anything.
Yeah, it wouldn't have anything to do with active voter suppression by, you know, the Republicans that keep passing laws to do it.
That's part of it. But, I mean, a lot of it's just disillusionment after Bush became governor in the 90s. Just disillusionment and everything. And so the Democrats just kind of went dormant. And what we're doing is we're reaching out to these dormant Democrats and saying, now's the time to change. You know, now's the time to... And people are listening. And we're getting people involved that haven't been voting since the 90s. We're getting people who originally weren't interested in voting at all. And now they're active. You know, and so pretty much it boils down to waking the sleeping giant, and that's what we have done. And, you know, Wendy, you know, I would say has a very good chance of winning. Leticia even more, because a lot of people who don't necessarily like Wendy will be willing to vote for Leticia.
And let's remember,
Texas is going to go blue, and it might as well be this year as well as, you know, a few years from now.
And you know what? That will be cause for celebration. And hopefully if it can stay blue through 2020, then there's a chance to correct all the gerrymandering nonsense. But also within the overarching theme of the conversation this evening, let's do remember that Greg Abbott himself has, and the right wing in Texas has a deep, profound, and abiding misogyny problem. Anybody remember Abortion Barbie?
Remember, it's still happening. I still hear that term every day.
Dear
well, God. That's the issue that got Wendy Davis onto the national stage.
And I mean, it's and in fact, there's this picture. You can see it if anyone's on Facebook, go to Wendy Davis's page or go to Battleground Texas's page. There's this image, this picture that's been circulating in social media. It was a conference on women's issues, and the stage was full of men, and at the center, Greg Abbott.
Mansplaining the ovary. Yes. Hey, Carol. Also in line with all of this, would you care to update us on what the legislature there in the great state where Hooterville is did this week?
Yes, the Senate our legislature decided that women in my state are too stupid to know what termination of a pregnancy is. They passed a bill to force women to wait an additional 72 hours after the initial consultation before they could have an abortion. Governor Jay Nixon vetoed that bill. They called a special session, came back in, and overrode his veto. So now the whores have to wait.
And now the taxpayers of Missouri stand get to pay an outrageous amount of money for a piece of litigation that will ultimately wind up with the Republicans losing.
Absolutely.
But they'll go to the polls in November saying, "I stood up for the snowflake babies."
Hi there, folks. These issues, we keep on talking about them, and the same kinds of things, and I'm not thinking terribly rationally these days, so bear with me. These situations are controversial. People who are in favor of choice have an argument that I mostly agree with, but it doesn't seem like we're ever going to be able to use our arguments to be able to persuade people that don't want to listen. And it seems like using rational discourse and trying to be moderate and everything else like that, that doesn't work. So are these situations ever going to be resolved so that people can finally be at peace with whatever decision comes out of it?
Well, Larry, where a woman's right to choose is concerned, that's the thing. It's already been resolved. It is an acknowledged constitutional right. As I pointed out the other night, you know, the NRA has a shit hemorrhage if we try to talk about rational regulation on the right to keep and bear, because we can't have that goddamn debate because it's a constitutional right. But by God, the right wing, in all of its misogynistic privilege, thinks that it can have this debate, and part of this is being in their faces and saying, you know, this is a constitutional right. Shut up. If we have to shut up about your damn guns, you shut up about women's bodies.
Well, I don't. Well, first of all, you know, I wish they would shut up finally about it.
They have to be told to.
So persuasion isn't going to work.
No, I mean, who's the Berkeley professor? Don't think of an elephant.
Oh, that's George Lakoff.
Yeah,
I bet.
So George Lakoff has said all along that where the left, what left, falls on its face is that we want to provide all the relevant details and the statistics and the numbers and see if you follow all of this, you will reach a natural and logical conclusion. And what he has pointed out is that the right wing is particularly effective because they grab people by their guts and then they start teaching. We want to grab people by brains that aren't there. We're not grasping at straws, we're grasping at air. But the point that I'd like to make is that it is changing. You know, when you've got a federal district court judge in the deep South who says, let's talk about a woman's right to choose relative to the constitutional right to keep and bear arms, that's sort of tectonic. I got a story this evening coming out of Kansas, the University of Kansas. There's a group there called September Siblings, And they are deeply disturbed about the rape culture that exists on the University of Kansas campus. And they have reached out to high school seniors saying, you might not want to come here because the University of Kansas isn't taking its responsibilities vis-a-vis campus rape seriously.
Well,
and that's a big change.
That's pretty serious because most undergraduates are women.
But,
yes.
But folks, about the gun thing, the right to bear arms in the Constitution, I'm not saying the Constitution is perfect. I mean, it's a man-made document. It's pretty good for what it says theoretically. But the thing is it says that the right to bear arms is extended to a well-regulated militia, and I'm not a militia. I'm not a militia.
No, that's the absolute truth, Larry. But you know, this country lives and breathes by the way the Supreme Court interprets the Constitution, and we have a constitutional case in the last decade that says nope means everybody gets a gun.
Well, they're all a bunch of extreme right-wingers.
So yeah, but you're missing my point, Larry. We also have a constitutional decision that says, yep, every woman can have an abortion within the parameters that all those men set up, you know, first trimester, second trimester, yada, yada, yada. Change is coming. The anti-rape movement that is rolling across college campuses is spilling out into the larger world. We've been having a discussion since the 90s about violence against women. I mean, as I remember it as an adult, the Violence Against Women Act and stronger domestic violence statutes, even in a place like West by God. Well, you know, now, I don't want to say thanks to, because that's just sick. But now, as a result of a high profile piece of violence in the NFL or a culture of violence, that discussion is broadening. And here's another one to just chill you to your bones. I ran across something over at Think Progress. This statistic just blows my mind.
Sorry, it's hard to hear you, Bob. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. But here's a statistic. Domestic violence kills more people than wars all around the planet.
Yep. We had a discussion in class today about the triple oppression that minority women face. For instance, there's a concept called intersectionality. You're not only dealing with racial discrimination, but you're dealing with gender discrimination, and they can't be separated in terms when you're dealing with someone who's a minority group because they have double oppression or triple oppression because they not only are oppressed because they're African American or Chicano or Native American or disabled, but they're also oppressed because they happen to be gendered. They're oppressed. You know what I'm saying. It's called intersectionality.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. And when you talk about intersectionality, I don't know what the word for it is, but there's a larger understanding that we need of the idea of violence. Violence is not, and I'm not trying to discount anything. And call me down if it sounds that way. Violence is not limited to one person striking another person, to a man striking a woman. Violence is also is often preceded by violent language. Am I right? You know, before the first punch gets thrown, there's turns out there was a story out of the Great Northwest this week in which a whole bunch of mega churches got shut down because it was discovered that one of the pastors referred to women as penis homes.
Yeah.
And I guess that's kind of mild by comparison, but, you know, you worthless C-word, you dirty whore, you filthy B-word, all of that usually happens before the first physical contact.
Hey, Bob, you remember out in Utah, the... For molesting kids. You remember when all his fellow sheep came out and said that he was the one that was harmed in that and he did no wrong?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Even until he came forward and said they did it for years. It's the same kind of violence. Violence becomes violence.
Right. And who's that reality show star that is he the guy that makes guns? And he was busted a couple of weeks ago for raping a child. And now the floodgate has opened, and another child has come out and said, yep, rape me too. And maybe another child said, mm-hmm, me too.
Yeah, this intersectionality theory talks about something called the matrix of domination, where it says that not all people, you know, that there's a general culture of discrimination, but not all women are discriminated against. Not all women are treated fairly or discriminated against equally, and some African-American women aren't being discriminated against in some ways, and some are based upon their education and their what their profession is. And it's so complicated. It's very hard to get, you know, it should be easy to get my head around, but it's right now I'm not thinking clearly.
No. It is complicated because sometimes it's as nuanced as being a light-skinned black woman as opposed to a dark-skinned black woman, or how much education you have, or whether or not you have children. I get it.
And not to try to inject humor in it, and I'm not, but for those of us of a certain age, we remember the early days of Saturday Night Live. Anybody remember the Woody Hayes skit?
Oh, yes.
it was after Woody Hayes had punched out some player on the football field. The following week, Saturday Night Live came on with John Belushi playing Woody Hayes. Was he eating chicken? And proceeded to just start beating the tar out of Gilda Radner playing Mrs. Hayes.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think Saturday Night Live was trying to make fun of domestic violence back then. They were pointing out the fact that Woody Hayes was a violent, nasty man.
That's right.
And look at where that nasty man made all of his fortune.
Yeah, and there was a football coach named Frank Cush of Arizona State that they said was horrible, but he's still.
And Texas Tech's head coach got run off. You know, I come back to what I was saying. There is a culture here, but that culture is not necessarily football or sport. Although I take fully into account what Todd was putting forth a little bit ago. But the problems that exist within that subculture are enabled by the larger problem that exists in the culture largely. Wow, good vocabulary, Bob.
Well, and then take a look at Notre Dame. I mean, the Christian college that it is, going out there and being fined for the offensive line, they were being fined or penalized for trying to take out the defense's legs and focusing on taking out the defense's legs.
That was Florida State. It was the Citadel from South Carolina, the military academy, was playing a game against Florida State, and the one player said that they were deliberately trying to use this tackling technique to remove the legs or to get, whatever it is, Bob, I don't know. But, you know, a tackling technique to ruin the legs. And the coach said, well, he used an unfortunate frame of words, and he'll be dealt with, he'll be disciplined accordingly. And apparently he probably was disciplined. And the Citadel coach said that was inappropriate, and then the player said, I'm sorry with what I said on Twitter. we really didn't try to take out these linemen's legs. So that's what
ixnay on the it hay.
Right. They busted the guy who exposed it on social media, yet three of the opposing team players were taken off the field, I think on stretchers, due to knee injuries. And probably afterwards, they all met in the center of the field for a prayer after the game.
Well, they do that because they're all Christians.
Right, yeah.
Well, I'm not laughing, but they're all Christians, so they get together.
And hey, by the way, just as a way of expanding and extending all of this, this is the second week in a row that a teacher in school has shot herself.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, Duncan,
I wanted to bring something up.
Oh, yeah, go ahead, Haley.
Somewhat related to the football issue. The high school here in the county is having their first home game tonight. This is the first game they've played since one of their players died earlier, this year.
Oh, God.
He had a serious concussion, 2 seasons ago and never recovered from it and died earlier this year.
And of course it's all described as being horribly, horribly tragic, very unfortunate. And how much is being said about, questions as to the nature of the headgear the kids wear?
You know, Dunk, I wanted to ask a question. I didn't hear.
Hold up, Larry.
Sorry.
Is that fairly close, Haley?
It's fine.
I mean, are there any open questions? Have things been put in place to protect players from the next kid that has that happen?
No, we don't want to do that because we're going to sissify the game.
How
old is the equipment the high school's using?
Haley, you want to jump in?
You know.
It depends on the high school. Now, this little high school spends, it's a big deal. High school football is a big deal there, and they have 7 assistant coaches. And this year opened up a indoor practice facility. This is a high school of a town of 2,500 people.
How's the math program, Haley? How's the language? How many foreign languages do they teach?
I think they teach 2 foreign languages. And this is a school district that the little school that I went to consolidated with 30 years ago. But and this is the same school that has the superintendent who came out of Texas. So I'm just waiting for something to happen with that.
Doc, I wanted to ask about, I don't know if you heard the 49ers-Cowboys game, but apparently they suspended Ted Robinson for some comments that he made about the Ray Rice thing. And my experience of Ted Robinson is he's usually pretty level-headed and pretty cool dude. You know, he does Minnesota Twins baseball and stuff too. But did he really say something that was that awful about the concerning the Ray Rice issue? I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. I'd never listened to the radio.
Okay.
So I wouldn't know. I just saw a blurb about it. The radio guy for the 49ers got suspended for 2 games or something. It didn't make sense to me. But
did you all catch Stephen A. Smith on ESPN?
No.
Which time?
Well, the first time he ran his mouth and basically said that he mansplained to us gals that we have to watch ourselves and not provoke these kinds of attacks. And then he staged a nutty 2 days ago about the head of NOW demanding Roger Goodell's resignation. I mean, he went totally nutty, screaming ranting, raving about how unfair it was that Roger Goodell, even if he did see the tape, that he should lose his job.
Right, because Roger Goodell's going to be eating beans if he gets sacked.
This guy
sat there through the incident with the KC player shooting his wife. Now we got this. And, I mean, has anybody checked to see what kind of a fiddle player Roger Goodell is? Because the NFL's burning.
Yeah.
Oh, and I've got an interesting comment here coming in from the Angry Indian that I think deserves to be shared. With 16 minutes remaining in the program, still waiting for somebody to take up Tim on his $75 Friday on the Front Porch Challenge so that we can finish the week to the good. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. So, too, is the traditional mail address if you want to use that. But Tim's got 75 bucks that he will double, he'll double 75 bucks that come in. So if you'd like to see your 5 become 10, 10, 20, 20, 30, et cetera, then do please jump right in. Angry writes, while this conversation is good, I just want to mention I find it very odd and contradictory that these very same dynamics, bullying, love, abuse, violence, can be found within occupied indigenous and anti-racialist minority struggles, yet many of the same people concerned about the Rice case refuse to acknowledge this and refuse to accept that the way Rice's wife is behaving is no different than how oppressed peoples rationalize their own conditioning or conditions. Frankly, much of the violence that occurs against women in First Nations, indigenous families and communities, and other ethnic economic minorities can be doubly connected between the wages of colonialism and westernized concepts of gender and family relations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think there's validity there, especially in light of that statistic that more people are killed by domestic violence, children and women in this world, than are killed by war. You know, that's not an endorsement. You know, for the lurking right-wingers out there, that's not an endorsement of war. That is, you know, that's finger-pointing to the larger problem. And to the same extent that I cited the NFL as a reason for the expansion of the discussion, it also is a condemnation of the fact that we're not interested in it unless it has something to do with some level of celebrity culture. Because, I mean, in this little county where I live, God only knows how many domestic violence calls there will be tonight or tomorrow night. Because, you know, it's the weekend. And so that means that hubby is going to come home with his Keystone Light 30-pack. And the game is going to be on.
Why would people want to be, well, anyway, I guess I'm answering my own question, but they say that somebody who is oppressed in their workplace, if you're oppressed in your workplace, you don't have any power, then you come home from your workplace and all of a sudden you're going to displace all of your anger at your boss and you're going to displace it on your wife.
So where do you think the phrase shit rolls downhill comes from, Larry?
Okay. Well, I just don't understand how somebody would be married to somebody, but then they want to beat him up.
Well, you know, you're not A, female, and B, ever have been married. And I'm not. That's not a critique. That's just a reflection of reality.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right.
I used to walk in the door and I tell my wife, I said, "Don't mess with me. I had a shitty day at work."
And you know, that's not violence, is it?
No, it's just saying it was a horrible day at work.
I was talking to somebody today. She's a newlywed, and she was telling me about, you know, her husband's occupation. And I said, you know what? I'm guessing because she was saying, you know, he'll come through the door and she'll say, "How was your day?" Which is a nice thing to say. It's a caring, it's a loving thing to say. But there are some occupations where you come through the door and you want, and I mean, you desperately want for everything that just went before for the last 8 hours to stay the hell outside your house.
Well, I'll give you an example. I did this water treatment plant starting in 2006, and I worked on it for a couple of years. I was a foreman on the job, and I had to deal with this idiot engineer And I said, do you ever build this stuff before? You know, you have any idea what I'm up against? Because the stuff he wanted to do, I said, it's not possible. When I've had engineers like that before on other jobs. And he's just like, well, I don't know. And I said, well, get your ass up here so I can show you. The guy was in L.A. But I said, what you want to do can't be done.
No, I mean, I heard, and I heard stories like that from my own father coming off the furnace. You know, he was high school educated. He'd run a boiler on an aircraft carrier. He'd learned to weld. He'd mined coal, became a furnace operator, worked his way up to a foreman. And he said, I've got this one guy with a metallurgy degree who comes in and tells me what the mix needs to be. Because, you know, in order to make the silicon metal, you had to have quartz and wood chips and coke. Mm-hmm. And he said, I told him, if we make the mix like that, you're not going to get the yield that you want. He says, yeah, but the equation says I am. He says, I don't care about your equation. I've been running this furnace for 20 years. I know how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point he said, all right, we're going to do that. We're going to do exactly what you want. And when you're done, you're going to shut up and let me run my furnace. And it came out exactly as my father predicted. And thenceforward, they didn't come messing with him on the mix.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the whole world is like that, and I don't want us to be perceived as saying that the family is they're not responsible for a lousy day. And sometimes it is just nice to say, I'm probably not a good human being to be around right now. Any pushback, Carol?
Yeah.
Well, this is just, it all boils down to, are we going to stop oppressing the workers who then go home and oppress their wives? Or, you know, it's all a part of this big grand circle where we just feed on each other while the 1% sits back and laughs.
Oh, Muffy, look, the little people are cannibalizing themselves.
Exactly. That's exactly it. That's what I read the news every day. I look at the interactions on social media. I go to the toxic cesspools that are the comment sections of blogs, and that's what it all boils down to.
Oh, I thought I was the only one who read the comments.
Well, I try not to. I kind of have this rule to try and stop reading below the fold, but every once in a while I forget myself and...
Yeah,
start
every once
that,
in a while, you know better, but you know, it's like me periodically still making a bowl of ramen. I know better, but oh, that flavor boost packet.
Exactly, and not to change the subject, but where are we on money tonight?
Well, you know, Tim has offered to match $75, and nothing.
And nothing.
Nothing.
Well, I'll tell you what I am willing to do is I'm did not have a good week on commissions or anything. So here's what I will do. If anybody will match it, I am right here in the heart of Osceola cheese country in the Ozarks, and they make an amazing like applewood smoked hot pepper jack cheese or homemade elderberry jam.
Oh Jesus.
If somebody will pony up, I'll put together a gift box for them and send it to them.
Ooh-wee. So we've got your choice now. This is growing. This is kind of cool. The Osceola Cheese Ozark gift box, or your choice between smoky ghost pepper cheese or locally grown pistachios. They're all out there. And so...
Let me remind you, I only got one bag of jalapeno pistachios. I'll be willing to let them go if over the weekend somebody matches Tim's challenge, and that will bring you even, right, Bob?
That would bring us even. And, Carol, okay. Do you have a suggested? Because the thing is, this is work. This is effort that goes into this. Do you have a suggestion for what you'd like to see for the gift box, Carol?
Well, they have a whole range of cheeses, anywhere from mild to hot. We can do, I mean, they've got Gruyere, they've got maple white cheddar, They've got Applewood smoked cheddar jack. They make smoked beef rolls.
Oh Jesus God!
That are just heavenly.
See, yeah, you have joined the community, and you may not realize it, but I long ago had to admit that I had a problem with cheese and my life had become unmanageable. This is killing me. let's just do the same thing we did with Sparky. Give us some suggestions: hot pepper cheese, smoky beef roll, whatever.
And gotta throw in the elderberry jam.
And gotta throw in the elderberry jam. I take it you have personally taste tested this, Carol.
I have partaken.
Maybe on a little toasted sourdough with some nice butter. Oh Jesus!
On my own homemade sourdough.
Oh stop! That's just obscene.
Got the mother sitting in the jar in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Oh man, nice.
Now you really shouldn't have said that, Carol, because I'm going to get the email now saying, well, you know, okay, I'll take the jam, but no, I want the bread.
If they want a mother, I'll even throw one of those in.
Whoa. So let's just make it $100 across the board. And
there you go.
Your choice. I need an address. I need you to tell me what it is you want, and I will forward it along. That's really sweet, Carol. Thank you so very much.
I'm always glad to contribute to the food porn on the horn.
You know, I never realized before that it rhymes.
That's got a nice ring to it.
See, I started something evil, but Carol?
Yes?
You're going to have to break down and send some to Bob so he can do a review.
We're going to get me that gig on Food Network yet, aren't we?
Okay, Bob, but it's $10, just like downtown.
Oh, goodness me. Well, thank you both so very much. And thanks very much to Horst and to Glenn. We are $5 away from matching Tim's challenge. So that is a very, very big deal. I wish this stuff could ship internationally, because I'd like to get some to Horst, but he isn't in the continental United States.
Cheese is a rough one to ship off.
I am proud to say that I know for a fact that things like dry cured meat products from southern Germany will make the trip. Oh my God. Altverse, just look it up. It's smoked sausage made with ham and freaking bacon.
Oh man.
Oh, that sounds good. Oh, I'm glad I stayed home tonight instead of going to the football game. The local team's already up 33-0, still in the second quarter.
Ooh-wee, they'll be drunk in the stands before halftime's over.
The only 2 points away from the mercy rule.
You've got a mercy rule in Arkansas?
Nobody's carrying a pistol.
Yeah. Were you happy about West Virginia left?
In Arkansas high school football, if a team has a 35-point lead, the mercy rule kicks in, and therefore the clock does not stop unless it's an official, unless it's, it does not stop for first downs or...
So they don't stop play or anything.
They just keep the clock running.
So your ambitious high school coach then moves to his no-huddle jet offense, right? Oh, God.
Probably. It's probably going to be pretty ugly. It already is now, so.
Hey, Larry, I heard you mention the name of my beloved Mountaineers. Yeah, we shut out Towson State last Saturday. Hoo-wee! 54-0, and we've been so win-hungry in Mountaineer land that the students in Morgantown completely lost their minds, rioted in the streets of downtown Morgantown, busted out the windows of the Dairy Queen, and wound up getting pepper sprayed.
Why do they do that? Why do they have riots if the team wins?
I don't know. We didn't do that. I mean, we stormed the field. But we didn't burn couches in the middle of High Street. I think every generation has to try to one-up the last one or something. But we play Maryland tomorrow. They shut us out last year. And so I'll be curious. You know, Clint Trickett, the quarterback, has been playing right respectably. And a week after next, Oklahoma comes visiting in Morgantown. It should be interesting. Hey, everybody, thanks so much for a wonderful conversation. Got to get out of here. Thanks to Haley and Todd and Waggy and Sergi and Larry and Jeremy and Carol. And thanks most of all to Sparky for his longtime management of this extraordinary, ordinary roundtable. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. Thanks to everybody who helps keep all of this going. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. Gina, it's all for you. Bye, y'all.